You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on All Marine Radio, and something that's become one of the favorite segments that we do here, you're going to hear another installment of right now, and I call it post-traumatic winners. And there are people that have approached me after sitting through post-traumatic winning and told me a story about how it impacted them, and I've asked them to come on and share that story. So you had a chance to meet, in the first edition, you had a chance to meet a corporal by the name of Josh Gilkey. If you haven't heard that episode, then I would encourage you to do that. You're going to meet a staff sergeant today by the name of J.T. Perry. So, J.T., first of all, good morning. Welcome to All Marine Radio.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mike.
You can call me Mac. That's what that's my IFF for friend or foe. If you call me Mike, I know you're not my friend.
Sorry, Mac. You sound good to me.
All right. First of all, we need to learn about you a little bit. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in Noonan, Georgia.
Where the hell's that?
It's about 30, 35 miles south of Atlanta on Interstate 85.
Really? On the road to?
Yes, sir.
On the road to where?
From Atlanta down south to Noonan, that's, like I said, 30, 35 miles.
Where would I be going if I went through and kept going south?
About another hour and a half, you touch Columbus down in Fort Benning.
Okay. All right. So you're born and raised there, and how's the Marine Corps get on your radar?
So when I was in, fourth grade, 2011, that's when September 11th happened. A great amount of patriotism popped up in the country. And
hold on, you said 2011, but you meant 2001.
2001. That's the Georgia coming out in me.
The Georgia public school system.
Yeah, we're 51st in education. So 2001, I'm in fourth grade. Some also called distant family member joins the Marine Corps. I had no aspirations at this point to be a Marine, but I got asked to go to graduation. I said, yes, sir. And I went down there, and to this day, it still sticks out in my mind. It was family day, and we let him and his wife have some time. And instead of trying to pile in up at, the restaurants on base, he ran in the commissary, got us some sandwich meat and stuff, and we went and had a picnic by the rifle range on Paris Island. And I got to sit there and hear and see the rifle range going down. I said, this is something I could get into. And ever since I was a kid, that's what kind of stuck with me, is I wanted to be a Marine because of that one day.
eating cold cut sandwiches, listening to the rifle range go down. I'll tell you what, that's a first. I never heard a story like that.
Well, when I was a kid, everybody wanted to be president, a firefighter. Well, I was like, I want to be a police officer. Right. Well, I want to be a Georgia Bureau of Investigation officer. And so I was like, oh, well, I can do 4 years. The Marine Corps will pay for my college, and I can go be a GBI agent. And then, I just woke up and was like, Marine for life. There it is.
There you go. All right, so you go through high school. A lot of times people get over eating bologna sandwiches next to the rifle range at Paris Island. You did not. Walk us through high school. That feeling of wanting to become a Marine doesn't diminish?
So I was spoiled. I went to East Coweta High School, and we had Marine Corps Junior ROTC there.
Mm.
So from the time I was a freshman all the way until I left as a senior, I actually was the commander of the armed platoon for drill team, and I was the company executive officer. So I did well for myself with that in high school.
All right. So high school just strengthens your desire to be a Marine. So when did you join the Marine Corps?
I joined the Marine Corps I signed my paperwork the day after my 17th birthday, which was my junior-senior summer, and I shipped to recruit training 17 days after graduating in 2010.
All right. So you, and then join the Marine Corps, what do you become?
I joined the Marine Corps. I was originally supposed to be Motor T. Down through the recruiting channels, I ended up becoming field artillery. So I became a field artillery firefighter radar operator. So counter battery radar for those keeping up.
And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's pretty important. From the rest of us, those things are those assets are huge assets when you're trying to find people that are shooting at you. And spare parts for those things are a big deal. And when those things go down, you have to move counter battery radar positions to cover areas and things like that, or if you can't tweak them. But it's a big deal. It's a big deal. So talk to us about your that's 2010, and so where have you been since 2010?
So I started right here at 10th Marines in 2nd Marine Division in 2010, and I chopped over to 2nd Battalion, 10th Marines for an Afghanistan deployment. In true Marine Corps fashion, we geared up, did our workups for personal security detail for the battalion commander, stuff like that.
Right.
We land in country, and you have a mission change. Now you're doing QRF for Camp Leatherneck. You're doing Nimr patrols of the Jordanians and the Bahrainis. You're standing post at Camp Shorbach. You're also gearing up for the TRAP mission. So big training evolution for the first couple months we were there. Good changeover, and we ran with it. Came home from there, was fortunate enough to catch one of the early special purpose MAGTACs. It kind of fizzled out early due to some unforeseen circumstances. But PCS to Okinawa in January of 15, did time with 12th Marines, 3rd Marine Division, and now I'm back here at 2nd Marine Division in 210, but I'm technically kilo battery, so 310 hopefully coming back soon and get to unroll the colors and do great things there.
All right. Talk to us about you come back from Afghanistan, and Afghanistan comes back with you. So tell us about that.
So I was a Lance Corporal at the time in 2012, and right before I had left, I met an amazing young woman who is now my wife. And while I was over there, we founded our relationship on communication. She tells me secrets and things that no other person on this planet except for, like, her mother and father know about. You know, some real deep things. I share my inner workings with her. And this is where I run into my traumatic event while I'm there that I didn't know at the time was going to wreak havoc on me down the road. So, like I said, we're, as part of our mission set, we had the TRAP mission. And while it wasn't a recovery of aircraft, we get a call one night.
Just explain to everybody what TRAP is.
Okay, so the way, and truth be told, I can't give you the detail. I'm not going to ping anyone whose actual MOS this is, but basically, tactical recovery aircraft personnel. So if a bird goes down outside enemy lines, TRAP gets sent out. They recover any personnel, assets, and if they have to, pull the pin on the thermite grenade. Equipment goes away, so that way no evildoers to America or the rights of freedom have the ability to hurt us back or get their hands on our stuff.
All right. Keep going now.
All right. So we actually, they're down in Zaranj, there were some suicide bombers. They go in to a bazaar and they end up, you know, doing their thing. Countless injured, some dead. And so we go in there. We have no knowledge on what the LZ looks like. The pilots got all the word on it. So we do what we've been trained to do in practice. We come in on an Osprey, the bird lands, we come out, set up our 360. Well, I'm attached with a young Corporal Bud McQueen, and we're running around with a major at his security detail. So we land, we get out, get the major, and we make liaison with his contact out there. And once he's assessed the situation, he determines that he's in good hands, and he sends me and Corporal McQueen to join the rest of our platoon. So we pile up on the fence out there where all of these innocents have, they're injured and they're trying to get help. They open the gates, and we're playing crowd control at this point, trying to assess, okay, who do we need to put on litters? Who can we deal with? And so I'm standing there, and up comes a young lady with a child. And the child is in and out. You can see she gives me her child. When I say child, I'm talking, you know, maybe 2-3 years old. Nothing, barely old enough to probably talk, let alone speak two different languages. And I go to take this child from her. And as soon as I touch this child, I mean, the child goes limp. No telling here and there. I ran as fast as I could to get the child to medical personnel. And I spent the next few hours continuously running litters and of men, women, and children. There was, I know, two Osprey support, and they were landing Army helicopters in there. We were throwing litters in there. We were having to try and load them out properly, so I carried the same people 2 or 3 times back and forth between different aircrafts to make room, trying everything I can to get these folks on there. So when the time comes for us to finally get out of there, the only way we can fit everyone and us is we have to get on the Osprey, load it down with litters on the, you know, on the Ospreys, you can put litters kind of stacked on the wall. We also had litters down in the walkway, and then us sitting in the oh-so-comfortable combat chairs against the wall with our legs tucked up underneath us to make room for the Air Force PJs to walk up and down the aisles. And we take off, and as I'm sitting there, just off to my right against the wall is litters of, you know, kids, probably age anywhere from, like I said, 2 to 3 on up to maybe 10 or 11. Now, by this point, we've been running all over creation, and actually being the Lance Corporal I had the saw, I had the extra ammo for the saw, the extra ammo for the 240, the med bag, so I'm smoke checked. So I reach in, grab, you know, a bottle of water that they had given us when we got back on the bird, and one of these kids sees me. You know, and they don't speak very well English, but they knew enough, and Mr. Walker, and they're, you know, making like that little hand sign and pointing towards their mouth with their hands. I offered the kids water, but medical personnel was like, stop, don't give them anything. We need to look at them first just to make sure, you know, that's okay. And I was like, and I'm trying to tell this kid, like, no, I can't, no. And we're flying, and this kid is still, Mr. Water, Mr., Mr. And this gets the attention of the other kids. And at this point, it seems like all those kids against that wall are focused on me and this one little bottle of water that I had in my hand. And for those of you who have kids or that young niece or nephew, whoever in your life, that blood-curdling scream that children do when they get hurt or when the spoiled kid doesn't get their way, these kids just started screaming because all they wanted was a drink of water. And I keep telling them no, keep telling them no. And as we're flying, it gets worse. And one kid literally reaches over the top of another kid and just falls limp, just screaming for a drink of water. And that kind of, you know, obviously shook me a little bit here. And so needless to say, we get back, we get off the bird, let medical personnel start doing their thing. And I didn't think much about it. I know it was rough at the time. It's still rough, obviously. But where it kind of comes together here, and I'm not going to share my wife's details. It's her story. If she wants to share on her time, that's her. But I'm not here to put anyone else's business out. I come home. I ask my wife, my girlfriend at the time, to marry me. She says yes, obviously, for some odd reason. Couldn't tell you why. So as we're going through our married life in Okinawa, the kid talks get more and more serious. Obviously, being away from families, we're feeling pressure. don't tell us you guys are going to have a kid while you're over there. We can't make it. We wanted a grandchild, and even my wife's like, I want a kid, I want a kid. Well, one night we were out of the bar out in town, and there was a young devil dog in there. He had his own kind of personal struggles going on at the time, but he, for some reason, felt the need to question my experiences in the Marine Corps. And he's like, you don't know what it's like to be in a foreign country and lose one of your friends. And it kind of stuck with me because I had struggled with, you know, I've had my own night terrors. I had my own feelings of I cannot be in the same room as a child that is crying. So my wife, amidst all the children talk, she reveals to me her trauma and why she wants to be a mother so bad, why she wants a child. So, you know, the aggravation of someone trying to pull my punk card saying that I've never done anything in the Marine Corps, my wife, pressure from family, pressure from wives, and a little bit of alcohol all kind of mixed together, and I end up in a ball in my king-size bed laying in my wife's lap explaining to her what had happened, and I had never shared the story before. So I tell her what had happened, and I look at her like, why is it that I feel so bad when there are literally Marines, soldiers, sailors, airmen out there losing their best friends, but yet some kid that I will never see again, don't know, have no relation to, still haunts me to this day. How can I, as your husband, promise to take care of you and give you everything you want in life, and scared to give you the one thing that you want, because if I go through what I call one of my episodes with our child crying, if I black out and lose part of my life again because I'm so stressed, what if I walk out on the kid in you? What if I do something unspeakable because I have no control or memory of what's happening? And that just kind of hit a hard point, but at the same time, it gave that understanding. And that's where I learned that I kind of need to talk, and I need to do something. And it took the conversation of her and my father-in-law, who got out of the Marine Corps in 1991, and he also was a contractor. You know, it's okay. These things happen. You know, just because you didn't get your opportunity to run in with guns blazing to defend your country doesn't mean you didn't do your part. A good friend of mine who unfortunately passed away 2 years ago now, she told me, don't be a hero. You are a hero more than you'll ever know. And I never understood that until I started having these talks and realizing that what I had gone through is still my problems, and it's still trauma, and that it needs to be related to. And you really hit the nail on the head during your post-traumatic winning. Trauma is trauma. You know, no one can judge you based off of that. It's how you deal with it and what you do stepping forward.
So you walk into that class that day, and what did you expect?
Well, I knew it was bigger than usual because it was a lot of the division. The entire 10th Marine Regiment was there. So I mean, 110, 210, and I was headquarters battery at the time. And I'm like, okay, they're driving us all to Camp Johnson. We all have to drive and carpool to Camp Johnson for this. So I was expecting something similar to the Oscar program. Again, a phenomenal program that, you know, deals with operational stress and stuff like that.
Right.
But I was expecting somewhat of a death by PowerPoint. But ever since I had gone through the Oscar program, I hold a special place for it because there is no right or wrong program.
Right.
I'm a believer in you take some from here, give some from there,
right,
and you know, cater it to the individual. And that's what proves success. But walking in and seeing you and the other presenters that day, it really shook me. And as halfway through the class, presentation, therapy session, whatever you want to label, whatever PTW has, I was like, this is some good stuff. And, you know, you mentioned it, on with Corporal Gilkey, but you can look around the room and you can tell who's dealt with something. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, you could see the little head nod. I mean, I was guilty. I was one of the guys nodding my head, and my buddy sitting next to me, he's like, you know what he's talking about, don't you? I said, hey, I know exactly what he's talking about. Been there, done that.
So when I talk about the helicopter crash and the dance of death, that was the first time that I had ever experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
You knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yes, sir. 100%.
So talk to me about the way that impacts you. So that day, now I just want to tell you, so Staff Sergeant Perry and I just went back. I was in Camp Lejeune like two and a half weeks ago. And I was doing, I did it for the units that hadn't seen it in January. And then, at the end of the week, Marine Expo South was going on and they had asked me to present it there. So I did it there too. So I had finished up on Friday and I have my stuff and I'm packing up, getting ready to go. And the Staff Sergeant walks up to me and introduces himself. And it's Staff Sergeant Perry. And we had an incredible conversation. He said, "You don't know what you've done for me." And I said, "You're right." And so talk to me about the impact, because you still have, so you see the class, and at the time of the class, where are you relative to, you don't want to have kids, right?
Yes, sir. I had the class back in January, and I, like I said, I walked out feeling the same amount of confidence levels when I walked out of that first session of Oscar. That feeling you get when you watch a good movie, like, it's like comparing a good action movie to a good drama movie. You still get that same raw emotion feeling. When I come out of a good class, especially on stress, and it's not just post-traumatic stress, whether it's just, operational stress, traumatic stress, anything, if there's something in there that touched me, I walk out feeling that. And so I walk out of that, and I rode back to main side with my buddies, and I was like, y'all need to make sure you pay attention. Like, I wish I could go to this class again now, because now I know what to expect, and I could probably key in on better things or certain aspects to pick up on it. And I continue to spread the gospel, because that presentation, if it happened again, I was like, oh, you're going to that? Hey, you need to listen to this. Walk in here with an open mind. Do not walk in with, this is more annual training or this is a check in the box. It's not.
Three hours of my life, I'm never getting back.
Yeah, exactly. If you walk in with that attitude, it's almost like a dare or a challenge to say that it was a waste of 3 hours. Because if you didn't pick up on one thing, if you weren't touched by it in some way, because whether it's you, your mother, your brother, your friend, somebody,
right,
you can relate to that, and that's going to be something you're going to need if you plan on sticking around this gun club.
Right.
And if you want a stronger relationship, you're going to need that.
Right. So you leave out of that. You leave out of there with that feeling, and what happens?
So I end up coming over to my new unit down at Kilo Battery, and you're continuing to run through your iterations of it. Right. And I have there's a young lieutenant in my unit, and he's like, yeah, I got to go to some class, this, that, and other. And he didn't mention the name of it. And I was like, it's the name of the game, sir. It's just annual training, more than likely. Go there. Do what you got to do. This is going to be semi-new to you. I'm sure you got some of this at TBS and all that, but it's a requirement. I got the reins. So he comes back, and he's like, yeah, it was this weird class. It was this class about stress and all that. And I was like an Oscar class? He says, no, I don't think it was Oscar. He's like, something about PTSD. I'm like, wait a minute. Post-traumatic winning? Yeah. I said, that is such an awesome class. Really? Because I didn't think nothing about it. And I almost freaked out. I was like, oh, he's a lieutenant. I was like, sir, look, you got to remember, this class is for you and those around you. Like I've said before, there's things in there that if you pick up on early, it's going to make your time in the Marine Corps a lot easier. And me and him had a small conversation about post-traumatic winning. And I was like, look at, I said, I don't know if you got a handout of it, but you can look it up on Armory Radio, the 8 commandments and 3 goals. If you're planning on staying in the Marine Corps, and especially the ground side and combat arms, you might want to put those in a notebook somewhere because you're going to need them one day, especially if we have to go defend this nation again.
So talk to me about how has it impacted your, I mean, obviously you have a fear about having kids, right? And how has it helped you deal with that? Has it helped you get to a better place with that?
So for me, I have my ups and downs days. You mentioned that. I think you called it the PTS PMS, which I stole that, by the way. I use that regularly.
Mine. I don't know where it comes from. All I know is I have it, man. And some days I'm okay with it. Some days I'm not, and I can't explain it. So whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, so as time goes on, I've learned to deal with it. Now I can be, like, I can walk into a room and see a kid. I'm cool. I can walk in the room, kids upset because he bumped his noggin. Hey, it happens. But still, there's days that blood-curdling scream happens, and I look at the wife and like, we got to make tracks. We got this thing, you know. But part of it is you mentioned telling your story, sharing the experiences. Right. And by no means am I saying that I came from a hurt or broken family when I say this, but I realize that my family has their own forms of trauma.
Right.
And indirectly, I've sprinkled in some of these notes, like my mother, God bless her soul, she's a fighter. Like, she's sweet as a lamb, but crazy as a pet coon. She will come at you hard and then turn around and take you to dinner. She's that kind of woman. And I never understood that growing up. Me and my mother had a tumultuous relationship at best. I really became her son at recruit training through letters. And now, after all of this, I'm starting to understand why she is the way she is sometimes. And she's always had that understanding, but she didn't have a lyrical way of cutting through the BS like you do. And so now we have that understanding. Same thing with my sister. She called me because she had gotten word of the stuff that I had gone through. And she called me one night saying, hey, I'm having this problem. My work wants me to take some meds, go through some counseling. And I'm like, I think everybody should go through counseling. It's not a sign of weakness. It's your chance to vent. It's your time to learn something. Go do it. And literally, as soon as I got out of post-traumatic winning, I sent her the link to All Marine Radio. I was like, they're going to post a thing on there called post-traumatic winning. Go read the 8 commandments and 3 goals. Go check those out. And I haven't talked to her much about it, but she said she looked into it. And when I talk to her, I can hear a difference in her voice. I've talked to my sister more in the past month or 2 months since I shared that with her than I have in the past 3 years. So I see it working there. Now, I went home on leave a few weeks ago, and my mother-in-law, my wife had to stay here and work, unfortunately, but I went home for a wedding, and I got to go see my mother-in-law, and the grandkid debate came up again. I said, you know what, today's the day. I'm going to sit down and tell the story. And I tell my mother-in-law the story, and her boyfriend look at me and they're like, you know, we didn't know that, you know, but don't think we're just being family. I said, I get that. I hold nothing against you, but I felt it's time. Me and my wife have been married since 2013. I said, it's time y'all heard that. And, I also went and shared that story with my second mom, if you will, a woman who practically helped raise me my high school years when I was going through ROTC, and she's the mother of the military children. All of us in the Poolee program together all hung out there, and this woman, again, her story, her time, but she has been through a lot. She has been a big inspiration to me, and, you know, things that I tell her that, and it kind of goes back to what I said, I didn't think my story mattered. I wasn't out there guns blazing, pinging terrorists. Why do I have to be messed up? So I tell my story to her, expecting her to kind of give me the I understand what you're going through speech. But just like you, she sat and listened, tears rolling down her eyes. And all she did, she got off the couch and she gave me a hug. And she's like, just know that you are a hero and I love you. And that if you ever need someone to talk to, I'm here. You know my story and you've helped me by some of the things you said and, you know, tell her how I went through post-traumatic winning the 8 commandments and the 3 goals. You know, she's lived with this trauma for years, and I look to her for inspiration because if she's still here, still fighting the good fight, I can make it too.
Holy shit, man. That's the coolest part about these stories is to go from where you were to now affecting the lives of other people is pretty amazing. When you look back, does it surprise you where you are now?
Well, by no means am I the world's most religious person, but I wake up in the morning and I immediately close my eyes back out, and I thank God that I'm still here. It's a blessing. It's a blessing that comes across as a curse at first, but when you start getting the key, the phrase is keys to the kingdom. It's never a key to the kingdom. So every key you get opens another door, and you find something new every day. And so to say that I never thought I would be this far is kind of a lie, because I have dreams and aspirations, and I take it one day at a time. So I look back on my story, and there's days where, like, you know what, I'm proud of myself. And again, I have days where it's like, why am I still here? I can't believe I did it.
My guest today is Staff Sergeant J.T. Perry, and with the 10th Marine Regiment. He's an artillery guy from the great state of Georgia. Do you give advice to people when you meet them now and you hear that they're struggling? Because I think that's one of the cool things, the things I love the most about post-traumatic winning is the opportunity to use, you know, the wisdom that's been passed down by generations of Marines, embedded in that presentation. You can turn around and touch people, you know, that afternoon. You can touch people that night, and the incredible power of that. So when you talk to people, do you give people advice, Stefan?
I hate to label it as advice because, you know, I used to hate nothing more when somebody would come up to me or I would share my story or tell them that I have trauma or an issue and like, oh, well, I know exactly what you're dealing with.
Right.
No, you don't. That's the wrong verbiage to use. So it's a tiptoeing. So what I do is if someone comes to me with a problem or an issue, you know, the first thing you can do is be an active listener. Whether they want to talk to you about it for 30 seconds or 30 minutes, it's worth the time because you never know what that 30 seconds is going to do just by sheer listening. And then if they ask, what do you think or what did you do or how did you do it? I share my side of the house, you know, and I give the tips, get off the alcohol. I'm not telling you to be stone cold sober, but at the same time, there's no answers at the bottom of a bottle. There may be demons inside of you, but the poison in the bottle is not going to kill them. It's going to kill you. Right. Just talking is going to help. So I share my story. They share theirs. I say, okay, now just think about what else you're doing. Get a little sleep. Get a little more PT and those type of things. Don't put those issues in a corner or a locker and forget about them, because it's going to build up and it's going to come back and get at you. Don't go out and preach your story. If you want to, awesome, but it's yours to tell when you want to tell. It's just little things you have to do like that. There was a picture on social media that went around a while ago, and it talks about a Marine being in a hole, and a civilian walks by, and the Marine cries out, "Help, I'm stuck in this hole and can't get out." And the civilian's like, "Well, you knew what you were getting into when you jumped in that hole, so you can deal with it. Good luck." then a doctor walks by and the Marine screams, help, help, I'm stuck in this hole. The doctor throws some meds down and says, here, this will help calm you down. Well, eventually the Marine runs out of meds. Well, another Marine walks by and the Marine in the hole cries out and says, help, help. The other Marine jumps in the hole. And the Marine in the hole looks at him and goes, what are you doing? Now we're both down here. He goes, don't worry, I've been here before and I've gotten out. And that's kind of what I tell Marines. I don't know how you're going to get out, but I've been out before, and if I can come back in and I'm willing to crawl out again, I'm going to do my best to take you with me.
If you run across that, will you send that to me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that is a depiction of what post-traumatic winning is all about, right? It's, and again, I say this, you know, there's a role for medication and there's a role for therapy, but my life experience and what I've seen is, you know, you can't medicate your way to good. You can't talk. I mean, how in the world can you ever talk what you went through to good? You can't. The only thing that's left is to give your way to good. It's to use your experience to help other people's, and in doing that, you'll find the goodness, and you'll find purpose in your suffering, and you'll find purpose in your suffering by giving of yourself. And I think it's the only way. It's the only way to get to good is by giving. And that's a lesson learned from a lot of years, from a lot of Marines. But I'll tell you what, the more I do this, the more I talk to people like you, Staff Sergeant, the more I'm convinced that it is what transforms us. And the example of the Hanoi Hilton, that's what those guys did before they even left Vietnam. They transformed each other by listening, by forgiving, by helping. Right? By showing compassion for. And we have the capacity to do that. And I think that your story, and I'll tell you what, it's really interesting. I did a thing this week for the first time with spouses who have seen post-traumatic winning. And those spouses have kind of lived in a world where their own traumatic events, ranging from everything from bad childhoods to miscarriages, was kind of put in a back seat because it's not equal to what happens in combat. And after they saw post-traumatic winning, and they heard a few things. One is, you got to talk about it. Two is, trauma is trauma, right? And
right.
We're not special because we heard it, or we you know, we get ours in a situation that we volunteer for, but it's combat. It doesn't make us special or different. And in talking to them and hearing their voices talk about, you know what, that made us realize that ours is every bit as much legitimate as theirs is, and we can talk about it, and we can go to a better place as a couple, as individuals, and how excited they were to hear that. I just, the more I do this, to me, that transformation is the key, and the coolest part of this is that we can all become trauma guides, if you will, for other people who are out there struggling with the struggle that you went through, with the struggle that I went through, and, you know, you're doing it on your own, and you're hurting, and then you have people say shit like, yeah, well, you don't really know what it's like. Oh, really? Well, you know, would you like to, you know, change places, and you can see what I went through, and then we can have maybe a more grown-up conversation about it? Because I can tell you this, it sure as hell wasn't pleasant, and I can't get it out of my head. And it's for me, it's been an incredible experience. And what made you, you were there just at the expo that day, right?
Yes, sir. So, well, I was fortunate enough. We had a big training evolution that morning and we finished up and I had some time to go to the expo. So I decided to go walk around and you were giving your presentation on
right.
the one of the vendors, I'm assuming you were using one of the vendors' screens out there.
Yep.
Showing their equipment. And I walked up and you were giving a class. And I started to just come in and sit down, but I didn't know who was in there, what it was for. So I was like, eh. I stood in the doorway, watched for a couple minutes, because it was actually the, I walked up just in time for the video about the lobster. I love that. I had seen that video before, and me and a gunnery sergeant in Okinawa actually had a conversation about that, because he's the one that showed it to me, and it was absolutely true. And that gunny, he was straight up gunny highway status. He was that old, crusty, in your face, my way or the highway gunny. And he showed me that video. And I had kind of, he was the one who kind of pushed me to actually go find help for myself while I was in Okinawa. And he showed me this video and we were discussing it. And I saw a different side of the gunny that day. I saw that the gunny's human, you know. Sorry to ruin the end of Heartbreak Ridge, but the gunny's human.
How important is that though?
Well, I mean, it is that there's times where you need that. You need that hard charging motivator to be up front and tell you to suck it up. But at the same time, it made me realize he had trauma. He didn't tell me he had trauma. And if he hears this radio show, he's probably going, well, he figured it out. He went through something. And just from talking to him and him having that conversation about that video lets me know he had some kind of trauma. And me and him had a different relationship. Yeah, he chewed my ass. He's a gunny, and I was a sergeant at the time. But at the same time, I could walk by his office, and I would knock on the door. Gunnery sergeant, I'm done with my task. Can I take something off your plate? And you could just kind of see the look in his face. He would either give me the, oh, so I need your help now, huh, sergeant? Don't worry. Yes, gunnery sergeant. I'd be like, actually, I have this for you. Okay, cool, gunnery sergeant. And that's all I needed. But yeah, so anyway. Again, old Georgia tales, I get off track real easy.
That's right.
Yeah,
no.
you were giving your presentation, and I finished walking around the expo, and when I came back, I saw you were wrapping up, and that's when I came and talked with you, and I just wanted to give you a thanks and let you know that I see it working. Marines go to post-traumatic winning, and they come back, and I have conversations with it, because I found the buy-in for it, if you will. I relate to it so well that I continue the conversation afterwards. And next thing you know, me and you end up having a 10-minute conversation, and General Furness walks up, and you didn't throw me under a bus. You threw me under a freight train. Here, tell the general what you told me. Yes, sir. Well,
what? So, that's not a freight train? Come on, you worked for him. What, are you afraid of him?
I have no reason to be afraid of him.
All right, well, quit being chicken then. What the hell?
I'm sure a 2-star general had something better to do other than hear his staff sergeant run his mouth.
What, you want to know what he would say? I did not. That's my J-O-B is that event. Yeah, so General Furness, all of a sudden I looked up and he was walking around, and I said, hey, come here. And staff sergeant got that funny look on his face. I said, I want you to meet somebody. Tell him what you just told me. And he did.
Yeah, and again, I don't know the background on it other than what you said. So you and General Furness go back. But, I mean, obviously y'all partnered to bring post-traumatic winning here. So I guess I owe him and you a big deal of gratitude and thanks for bringing this program. And I hope it's actually meeting his intent. I think it is. I can see and hear the difference in Marines when they come back. And, you know, naturally some Marines are like goldfish, that one ear out the other and they forget about it. But as long as there's a little seed, a little indentation put in their, you know, grape that someone out here's done something, maybe they will cling to it. And if all they remember is, well, the name of it was like All Marine Station or All Marine Raid or something, a quick Google search and we're going to find it.
Right. No, you know what, and that you're right about that. It's, you know, depending on their state of mind when they're there, you know, they may retain it, they may not, they may shit on it, but I promise you this, there's enough stuff in there that is, that will grab your attention. that you're not going to, if you're awake, you're not going to forget it. And if all you remember is post-traumatic winning or post-traumatic all-marine something, when you need it, you're going to find it. You're going to find it. And I say that about, you know, when I, yeah, and you alluded to it earlier when you talked about not really advice that you give, but things that you talk about, that if you're dealing with this kind of stuff and you're drinking, you got to stop, because you'll destroy yourself. And so, and when I say that, I know I can hear Marines saying, piss off, old dude, right? But I know they're not going to forget it. That I know.
Right.
And I say in the presentation, if it was only 100% true, I wouldn't say it. But it's 1,000% true, and there's no getting around it. And that comes from veterans of World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen. If you want to cope with your trauma with alcohol, and so I can feel that, you know, I can see guys smile and roll their eyes and say something to somebody sitting next to them, you know, but I know this. It lands with a thud, and it needs no salesman. And as you said, hopefully, when there comes a point in their life when they need it, then they'll know where to find it. And to me, if that's the low bar, right, if that's as bad as it gets in that class, then it certainly is well worth doing. But I think, as you said, the Marines that walk by, even the ones that maybe don't have the kind of trauma that you have in your life, as you said, they know other people that do. And I think what it gives them is, hey, well, maybe I could have a conversation with my cousin or with a friend of mine or with my sister or brother or my mom or dad. And so to me, it's certainly well received and well worth doing, as you said.
Yeah, that's really all I want. You know, again, I did the Oscar P3. I teach Marines and I share the story. If I help one person help another person, I've done my mission accomplished.
How many people have you helped? One?
So that's a help is a broad term. So
right.
my first class I taught, I certified like 18 Marines. And then unfortunately, I'm not going to throw numbers or names out there, but when I was in Okinawa, because I was a staff NCO that lived closest to the barracks, they confused stress with suicide. So every time there was a suicidal ideation or some shady words going around, I got the phone call at 2:00 in the morning. Did I mind? No. But at that point, and I kept telling us, it's too late for me at that point. Right. At that point, I'm doing what you can do. That is a higher echelon of care. Let's step back and let's talk about what led up to this. And through preaching that, I was actually asked to come back and be a guest speaker for that program twice now.
Wow.
And that was in Okinawa. I haven't gotten it fired up over here because my unit's been trained. But I put it out there. I've thrown the leash. Hey, I'm Oscar. Hey, you should check out this. You know, check out post-traumatic winning. Because that, and I think that's where a lot of Marines get tied up. The Marine Corps is alpha males. No one in the Marine Corps joined to be a Bravo male. We all joined because we have an alpha male mentality. And so no one wants to admit that they're jacked up until it's too late. No one admits their wrongs until it's too late. We need to get humble. We need to find the Marines to have that abundance of stress and identify it early. I'm not saying get rid of it. You need stress in your life. With no stress, everything's a traumatic event. But if it starts at recruit training, your drill instructors yell at you and IT you until, you know, the floor is wet with sweat. And then you go to MCT and you get a small sampling of what it might be like in combat. Then you go to your MOS schools and then you hit the fleet. I'm not telling you Marines or suggesting that Marines go out here and haze their Marines, by no means. But stay on them. Use realistic training. Talk about the hard things. Let them know this is the Marine Corps. This isn't, you know, the Boy Scouts. Yeah, we're going to go camping, all right. You're going to go camping with Artie Sims and machine gun blanks shooting over your head. But that's the reality of it. The more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in combat. And it's the same thing with personal issues. Hey, you're a PFC. Stop buying cars with 33% interest rates because that creates struggles. And this is all basic things our NCOs teach our junior Marines, that staff NCOs are teaching their NCOs and so on and so forth. But the problem is there's no follow-up. Don't do this, walk away. No, don't do this. Did you do this? No, good. Because look, this is what happens. Continue to use the stress continuum and don't push it into that orange or red limit, but just squeak up into that yellow and then have the talk, bring it back down to that green zone and let that green zone of stress expand so that way when we hit these hard points in life, whether it be, you know, a tight financial issue, whether it be a marital issue, okay, I've been taught that I have to talk through this. If I need to be an active listener. All these other things that, in the absence of clarity, revert to training. And when you do that, I think we'll start seeing a decrease in stress levels and even potentially suicidal ideations.
Well, you know, and here's what I think. I mean, here's what I hope. My hope is by us talking about it, by having tools like three goals and eight commandments and learning about it, and that's all OJT stuff that comes out of the culture, right? This is from our culture, and these are things that look, you look at them, they're all true. There's no getting around any of it. It's all true. And so, okay, wow, this is awesome, because now just as much as I know how to employ a counter battery radar in the field, I now have kind of a set of guideposts and a set of truths on how to navigate this whole world of trauma, whether I got it in the Marine Corps or not. So
right.
That's what I love about it, is that it comes out of our culture, based in the truth that you can use it anywhere, and it makes you smarter immediately. Oh, okay. All right. And so, I mean, for those of us who weren't beneficiaries of something like that, I mean, I wish, can you imagine if somebody gave that to you when you were 18? And then as things begin to happen to you, you look at it and you say, oh, hell, they told me this shit would happen. Oh, they told me this, and I'm going through this, and this is normal. Okay. Well, I guess I should talk to somebody. And, they said, talk to your wife. Okay, so I'll talk to my wife or my husband. And so I think, I mean, I wish somebody had given me this stuff when I was younger, because I do believe what you're saying, Staff Sergeant, is that if you're willing to talk about your issues, and if you're working towards a positive direction, there's no reason to make the facing movement to the path of personal destruction if you have that hope in your life. And that's a huge part of what post-traumatic winning is. But I just want to say thank you for coming up that day and introducing yourself and allowing me to throw you under the bus and introduce you to the commanding general, which is totally unscripted, but I enjoyed doing it anyway. So thank you very much for coming up and talking to me. And I just want to challenge you to, I don't think I need to, but keep doing what you're doing. Keep changing lives, because that's the way it gets better. That's the way it gets better. And I love the stories that you told about, talking to people in your family, talking to your in-laws, because, the path to a great life, is paved with self-discipline. And part of that self-discipline is disclosure. It's talking about your issues, which gives them permission to talk to you about theirs, and you begin to change lives. So you're doing it, and I want to thank you for coming on and talking about this today. And is there anything that I haven't asked you without which this hour wouldn't be complete, about either your story, about your thoughts on post-traumatic winning, your thoughts on living with trauma, or something else?
No, I mean, I think we covered all of it. I got kind of ran off there, so I do apologize for a little bit of rambling. That's the George in me, but like I said, if nothing else, I still just want to say thank you for bringing it, and I want to praise you and ask you and challenge you to keep doing it, whether it's with the 2nd Marine Division, 1st Marine Division, or whoever. You know, I feel like even today there's a VFW or an American Legion post that could use this as a discussion. And, you know, if you're ever back this way, if you're not too busy, you know, riding that bus that you threw me under to the general's house to have a sandwich, there's always a place for you to stay here to come give this speech again.
I'd love to. I will. And like you, is there what? Could you stop doing this now that you know what you know?
There's no way.
Right.
And again, so part of that's the basic Marine Corps leadership. We've, in a way, Marines have, like you said, we've done this for years and no one's picked up on it. It's not until PTS started hitting the news channels and even Hollywood with movies like The Hurt Locker and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of become a big deal, and they're trying to figure out how the military's done this for years, and somehow we still haven't perfected the formula, in which, like you discussed, there is no such thing as a perfect formula. You can't put it in black and white. But I'm going to continue doing it, whether because I realize I'm doing it or not. It's just who we are as Marines. That's our tribe, as you put it. The Native Americans told stories around a campfire and spoke of myths and urban legends, but who's to say that's not paraphrasing for something greater?
Well, you know, there is no greater thing than touching somebody else's life and then hearing from them, you know, how deeply you've affected, which is what you did for me. You know, so in you walking up, you know, and that's, I mean, you heard me say it in the class. I mean, I'm the coolest person here because I have these experiences every day. But the best part about this class is I'm going to give it all to you, and you can begin to have these experiences on a regular basis where people come up to you and say, hey, remember that talk we had? Well, I have a cousin or I have a friend, and I talked to them and I told them about this. And, oh, my God, you know, he stopped drinking and he stopped doing this. And now he's talking and he even now has taken this. And I want to show you a text message he sent me. I mean, when you have those events in your life, I mean, that's a great life. That's honestly a great life. And then what you've really done is, and this is the whole intent of post-traumatic winning. You've taken a traumatic event that has changed the course of your life, and you've leveraged that to the good. You've done the best you could with it, which is use that to touch the lives of other people and change their lives. And that's as good as it gets. You can't do it better than that. And that's what's so cool about it. So,
yeah. Well, I've had to preface my story a few times. It's like, by no means am I glorifying my story. I'm not telling my story to make myself out to be somebody. But it's to tell you and to let you know, because it's what helped me. My magic potion of what makes me better might not be yours. But if nothing else, together, we're going to find something that's going to work.
All right. My guest for the last hour has been Staff Sergeant J.T. Perry from the great state of Georgia. And I did not mean to insult the Georgia public education system. but he's from the state, not me. But Staff Sergeant, again, thanks for coming on and doing this. Thanks for coming up and introducing yourself that day. God bless you and all the best of luck in the future.
Same to you, Mac.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.